Our presentation today is by Reverend Matt Aspen, Readying to Rise. Reverend Matt's our full-time minister, our contract minister for this church year. His presentation today is entitled Readying to Rise, as I mentioned, and relates to our fourth UU principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Reverend Matt.
Greetings, dear ones. It is so very good to be here with you on this day. This day where literally billions of people of faith are celebrating a rare confluence of holy days for Muslims and Jews and Christians alike, all honoring reflection, renewal, and salvation. As I thought about the message I would bring to you here today, on this Easter Sunday, I saw an overlap between the 40 days of separation symbolized by Lent and the resurrection of Jesus back to life, as we all begin the slow process of bringing ourselves back to life in a world that has been changed over the past 2 years in ways that we are still a long way from understanding. As Unitarian Universalists, whether we believe the stories passed down from our ancestors literally, or simply as examples of survival lessons that can help to inform our decisions as we face our current challenges, our living tradition encourages us to examine wisdom from the world's religions to help inspire our ethical and spiritual lives. This particular Easter Sunday also overlaps with both Passover and Ramadan, an occurrence made rare because these traditions are grounded in different calendars that are connected to the moon cycle as opposed to the sun. But since all are occurring right now, and since there is no shortage in the world today of a need for wisdom that can help guide our way forward, I've turned to these traditions to help inform my message to you today as well. And since the world feels especially topsy-turvy right now, in this moment of history, I'm even planning to throw in some lessons from our pagan and native siblings. We are living in confusing times. I think we can use all the help we can get as we try to consider what do we do next. Let's begin with the pandemic itself. This invisible and often deadly contagion began sweeping across the globe. It was 2 years ago at this point. Those of us who put a lot of belief in science began to receive a steady dose of information, sometimes frightening, sometimes conflicting, often confusing, all aimed at helping to guide us regarding what behaviors we might consider adopting to keep us as safe as possible. Our schools sent our children home, perhaps keeping us safer, but leading to a rash of unintended consequences. Workers in white-collar jobs discovered that their tasks actually could be done almost entirely remotely. Blue-collar workers whose labors required in-person activity were forced to risk their own health and the health of their families to ensure basic services continued for the rest of us unabated. And healthcare workers. Healthcare workers have been forced to bear the brunt of this challenge, both taking on the risks and watching the pain of unprecedented loss within a system that was stretched beyond its breaking point over and over again. The elderly amongst us were isolated more than ever, to the point where loneliness and separation significantly amplified existing health challenges. No one was exempt from the turmoil that this pandemic has wrought. And now, in this moment, in this spring, we are collectively beginning to emerge from this forced separation. But it's not a singular event. There's no stone being rolled back and no miraculous explanation being offered. Instead, we are looking at less deadly variants, lowered case counts, mixed in with waves of upticks and downticks that make us keep wondering whether it is truly safe or not to dive back into life. Each of us experienced this pandemic differently. But if there is one thing that tends to be common amongst folks whose lives have been upended, it is a longing for a return to the way things used to be. Except, of course, the reality is that the world has continued to change while the pandemic raged. And if we are paying attention, we are reminded almost daily that the way things used to be perhaps wasn't all that healthy either. There is so much fear and uncertainty in the world that authoritarianism is on the rise globally as folks grasp for any message that promises them safety and security. We saw the stoked fears and deep frustrations of many of our fellow citizens combust into a nearly successful takeover of our democracy on January 6th last year. We are seeing cracks in the gospel of neoliberalism as a path to helping all ships rise in the tide, as we see instead unfathomable levels of wealth being amassed by a tiny collection of people. Simultaneously, the abundance of our planet is being mindlessly depleted, and none of us are exempt from feeling what it's like to go without, due to what today are labeled supply chain disruptions, but tomorrow will likely be actual lack of supplies due to overconsumption. So as we come back together, as we welcome this new spring, this new rebirth, it is clear that some things need to change. But change is the one thing that we humans are most wired to avoid, even when it has become clear that things must change. It is hard to resist the promises of past comforts, especially when the thing we crave most of all is nothing more than just that, comfort from the storms of life. So, as we are drawn together to celebrate this ancient tale of a miraculous return to life after death, a death which included an atonement for all of our sins, the question I pose to you today is this. Are we, as Unitarian Universalists, also ready to rise up from the trauma and death of COVID-19 and bring the much-needed light to the continued suffering of the world that our faith tradition demands? There are three categories of useful lessons culled from our ancestors that I will offer today for your consideration on that path. Each of these is designed to help strengthen our spirits, clear our minds, and set us up to approach the world with more humility and greater equanimity. The first is sacrifice. The second is grief. And the third, thankfully for a little lightheartedness, is celebration. Since I have equated our collective pandemic isolation to the Easter tradition of Lent, I'm going to spend most of my time here. Many traditions utilize fasting for a variety of spiritual purposes. Christians celebrate Lent as a way of honoring the 40 days and nights Jesus spent in the desert, preparing his soul for the challenges he knew he was about to face. In medieval times, the Catholic practice of Lent was enforced as civil law. During this time, no food sourced from a land animal was permitted. These foods were not banned because they were bad. Rather, it was done to create a greater appreciation of these foods so that when you were able to partake in them again, you would be properly thankful for their presence in your life. Lent is ultimately a spiritual practice designed to promote gratitude. We are also in the middle of Ramadan this year, which serves as a reminder to Muslims of the month when the Quran was first revealed to the Prophet Muhammad. As one of the five pillars of Islam, the act of fasting is meant to remind Muslims of the less fortunate and to reinforce the need to be thankful. So, the roots of these two traditions, which began at different times and for different reasons, both had the same intention: to increase gratitude for the abundance that we do have. For many of us, The forced isolation of pandemic has led to a greater appreciation of the relationships that we have been cut off from. Remember what it was like to come back. It was so good to see people in person, to be able to look at people. For some, it has led to a profound awareness of just how fast we had been running, trying to keep up. We were forced to come back and slow down a little bit. For others, it has created a deeper connection within families. In others still, an awareness of just how critical our support systems outside of family can sometimes be. This is the exact opposite of what capitalism suggests. Capitalism creates a scarcity mindset, a race for faster and cheaper and more, and a false sense that comfort can always be acquired for a price and with little regard for consequence. Since many have cast these ancient lessons aside or watered them down so much that there's no way for their lessons to take hold, it's little wonder that we face endemic levels of loneliness and addiction in this country. We rarely make intentional sacrifices to help us reset our longings. Perhaps it is time to reconsider the reasons for the seasons and explore the old roads that are becoming less and less traveled. They served our ancestors well for thousands of years. And even if we don't believe all of the stories connected to their telling, there are certainly lessons we might benefit from if we are willing to re-examine these practices with honor and humility. I can tell you that for the first time in my adult life, this born Catholic, lived atheist, who then became a semi-spiritual UU, decided to give up something for Lent this year. What I found was that this 40-day intention helped me to completely reset my relationship with a habit that I had been struggling with for a very long time to change. 40 days seemed like a manageable timeline, and I can report that this exercise did have the desired effect. Intentional abstinence from a habit created the space I needed to examine the sources of the habit with a clearer lens. And I must admit that an unexpected outcome has been a deeper sense of gratitude for the life I have and a stronger commitment to make even more intentional choices going forward. While preparing for this section, I also studied current pagan thoughts related to fasting. One good suggestion I found was the idea of consciously reconnecting to the natural world by intentionally foregoing foods that are out of season in the places we inhabit. Capitalism now makes it easy to access whatever foods we want, whenever we want them. But this comes with great hidden costs that it's really easy for us to ignore if we're not paying attention. Exploited labor, leached soil, polluted rivers, and fossil fuel consumption for transportation are the unsustainable price we pay for the pleasure of enjoying a peach in February. As we work to strengthen ourselves, to create a world that is no longer based upon unlimited consumption, perhaps we might be well served to either recommit to or consider anew acts of intentional limiting that might lead us to better individual and collective outcomes. The second thing our modern society might do well to consider ancient lessons on is the concept of grief. I know we talked about this a few weeks back, but I think it's fitting here. So much has been lost over these past 2 years. To say nothing of missed visits and holidays and graduations and vacations and celebrations, almost 1 million deaths have been attributed to this disease in this country. It is quite likely that everyone gathered here today has either lost a loved one or knows someone that has. Those of us engaged in paying jobs are typically allowed 3 days to grieve the loss of close relatives, and none to grieve the loss of close friends. Normalizing this timeline creates the false impression that we should be able to just move on quickly from losses and get back to it. But that's not how we humans work. The people and relationships in our lives combine to help us understand who we are. I am a son, and a father, and a sibling, and a friend, and a minister. not because I am those things in isolation, but because of the relationships that makes those things so. And even though I know that each of those relationships is finite, if any of them are taken from me unexpectedly, it will have a profound impact on the very definition of who I think I am. The same thing can be said of missed rituals. I spent my 50th birthday isolated alone in an apartment at the very beginning of the pandemic. My graduation from seminary was canceled. My ordination was done virtually. It is also likely that many gathered here today missed out on so many important events and connections over the last 2 years. And even though I know these events happened, there's a part of me that still remains unsettled by it. We attach rituals to these life events for a reason. And when they are missed, the loss is actually tangible. While we are encouraged in this society to just grin and bear it, a healthier approach would be to make intentional space to actually grieve our losses. If you haven't already done so, I would encourage you to be open to the possibility of honoring the grief that you rightly feel for the losses that you have endured. Jumping right back into life without taking time and steps to intentionally heal our wounds leaves us weaker and less resilient as we are called upon to face whatever challenges life decides to throw at us next. The final ancient practice I would like to hold up, as we reconvene again in our collective efforts to share our light in the sometimes darkened world, is celebration. We sometimes relegate joyful celebrations to the children. I looked out the window, they were having a ball out there, running around and looking for stuff and collecting things. No doubt many of the children in this community will be hunting for Easter eggs, gathering small treasures, and enjoying chocolates this weekend. But celebration serves an important role in our adult lives as well. Christians over the world are celebrating the miracle of Jesus rising from the dead. Muslims will end their Ramadan fast with a joyous celebrations of Eid al-Fitr. Our Jewish friends celebrating Passover are recounting the story of Exodus when their ancestors emerged from slavery. Pagans have always celebrated the return of spring, and the first people of this land do the same. When you attach celebration to the shared achievement of something difficult, be it surviving winter or the remodeling of a building, it can serve to refill our collective souls. Life can be hard, but it is also so beautiful. And failing to engage in joyful celebration can cause us to forget about that and just simply lead to nihilism. So, as we come back together, in these challenging times of war and climate change and ever-growing uncertainty, after grieving what has been lost, I would encourage you to revel in joyful celebration for all that remains. You are here, and I am here, and you are here, and you are here, and you are here, and we are all here together. And that is a miracle worth celebrating. Look each other in the eye and offer a smile. Hug old friends. Sing a song if you can, and be willing to dance like nobody is watching. Because if we are to have any chance to change the ills of this world, we need to be strong. We would be well served to re-examine the spiritual disciplines like fasting that are designed to help us better appreciate the riches that we do have. We would be wise to actually acknowledge the grief that we are holding and to do the work to repair the holes in our heart before we go running back into the breach. And as our wise ancestors always try to remind us, on days like Easter, joyful celebration when the dark days have passed helps us to remember that spring has once again arrived and hope will once again bloom anew. This world that we live in is what we make it. As we begin to emerge from the tomb of forced social isolation, let us commit to honor the life-giving practices that sustained our ancestors through times just as hard as we are facing today. Let us take the lessons they have shared with us, converting them to our present sensibilities if needed, and use the gifts they have to offer as we prepare to add our contributions to this next chapter in human history. Eid Mubarak, Chag Pesach Sameach, and Happy Easter to you all.
Thank you, Reverend Matt.